we bit the apple and the garden was lost. And so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know
we're done? Yeah. Started to burn many things we found. That's the glorious Dar Williams with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are here for a celebration. This is one of those shows you really have wanted to do for years and years and years, and we're going to do it. We're going to talk about the imminent shutdown of the Diablo Canyon nuclear reactors. The fight's been going on since about 300 BC, but really dating back to the 1960s. We have three perfect guests for today's show. We got Jim Riccio from Greenpeace. Jim, you there, buddy?
I'm here, Harv.
All right, my man. Linda Seeley from San Luis Obispo. Seeley, are you with us?
I'm here.
And Ace Hoffman. Ace, you with us from the San Diego area?
Yes, I can barely hear you, but I'm here.
Okay, I'll try and talk louder and more consistently. So, the news has been filled with the an agreement to shut down the Diablo Canyon nuclear reactors. I was arrested there in 1984. Linda, I think you were born on the site, weren't you? You've been there a long, long time.
Right.
Uh-huh. Jim and Ace, you two guys have been with us forever. What I want to do, three guests is a challenge, so we're going to go in sequence, and you'll speak your piece, and then we'll move on. And we're going to start with Jim, because I want to deal with the global implications of this. This actually is a bigger victory worldwide, I believe, than it is locally, because Ace and Linda, and I'm sure you are too, Jim, are all too familiar with the devils in the details of this much publicized deal. And I got to tell you, by the way, I was driving through Cleveland, Ohio, a couple of nights ago. I went to pick up my daughter from school. This was not the victory march of the Cavaliers. And I looked up, you know, there's one of these big news wires like they have in Times Square. And there was Diablo Canyon, and the shutdown being portrayed as the end of the atomic era. So Jim Riccio at Greenpeace, and then we'll go to Linda, and then Ace, and we'll kind of keep that order as we go through the hour. Jim, you deal with a global organization fighting nuclear power on the mega scale. Tell us what you think are the implications and impacts of this announcement from PG&E that they're not going to seek a relicense for the plant, and having the media play this as an end of the atomic era.
Well, Harv, you know, you're looking at this as the last reactors in California. San Onofre had previously shut down due to the degradation and defects in their steam generators. So, in fact, you've taken the world's sixth largest economy, and you've made it nuclear free. Now, we still have some years to go, and hopefully, you know, we get the plant shut down without any more incidents or accidents or, God forbid, a Fukushima here on U.S. soil. And the thing that's really important about this agreement and joint agreement was that we're not going to be replacing it with natural gas. You know, the agreement is to replace the output from Diablo Canyon with a greenhouse gas-free portfolio, including renewables, energy efficiency, and storage. And so it really is a template for how we should be moving forward, both here in the States and globally, to get rid of the danger of nuclear power and at the same time address the concerns of climate change and not contribute any more CO2 to the atmosphere.
Well, that's a big deal. And okay, so let's deal with this aspect first. The nuclear industry and its so-called pro-nuclear environmentalists, that's an oxymoron, and we have the emphasis on the term moron, if there ever was one. But PG&E has agreed here that they're going to replace this power, which they've denied. The nuclear industry has denied for decades that we could replace a nuclear plant with renewables, and now this deal coming from one of the world's biggest utilities says it can be. Linda Seward, do you want to comment on that from San Luis Obispo?
I sure do. San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace went to the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board just exactly a year ago. I believe it was a year ago today in Washington, D.C., where our climate expert, our expert witness, testified to them that Diablo Canyon's power could be replaced by renewables. And what do you know? A year ago, PG&E argued that that would be impossible. And here we have today their admission and acknowledgement and support of the fact that they, and taking lots and lots of kudos, by the way, for being so progressive, that they can replace Diablo with renewables. We're very happy, by the way, that this is happening. However, I want to give a caveat to everybody who's listening, which is that the plant has 9 years left to operate on this, with this, under this particular agreement. That is a long time. That's a lot of nuclear waste piled up. That's 9 years of waiting for the big earthquake. It's 9 years of flagging interest in the plant by the operator. It's 9 years of wondering whether they're going to comply with all of the post-Fukushima orders that have been ordered, or are they going to drag their feet on those? So we feel, Mothers for Peace feel, that our job right now is even more important, to watch them and monitor what they're doing.
Well, I'm going to agree with everything you said, Linda, and we're going to come back to that. We're going to do this kind of in a round-robin thing and
okay,
deal with you. But you set the table here. We have a full hour, so I want you guys to all take your time and say everything you need to say. So on the solar aspect, Ace Hoffman, you have a very strong technical background. What kind of solar are we talking about here? It's been kind of vague. And then, you know, everybody's saying, well, the PG&E is going to replace it with solar. Do you have any ideas or anything in the agreement that you've seen that spells out what they mean by solar?
No, I'm not sure what they mean by that, although I did want to point out that they believe about a third of the power is supposed to be replaced with conservation. And if they don't succeed in replacing that by 2024, it looked to me in the agreement like they can extend that pretty much as long as they want to get that portion. So there's that. I have a few other caveats that we'll discuss along the way.
All right, we'll get to that. Okay, so let's talk about this solar thing. And this is a hugely complicated deal, as you might imagine. I'm referring to it actually as a treaty. I mean, you've got all these warring parties, and it's important to understand that, as all three of four of us do, I'm sure, that labor has signed on to this. I mean, this is what makes it, you know, a huge deal. The organized labor of the IBEW, which has been representing the workers and which has been vehemently pro-nuclear, has signed on to this agreement. Jim Riccio at Greenpeace, do you know anything about the specifics of what they mean by solar in this agreement?
Well, the way they're pitching it is, you know, that Diablo will be replaced by a portfolio of energy efficiency, renewables, and energy storage. And that will make up 55% of their renewable portfolio standard by 2031. In terms of like sussing out from the joint petition exactly where and what each of those includes is rather buried and rather difficult. But the good news is, Harv, and even we've known this day was coming when renewables would continue to plummet in price, and that we saw it already driving out coal plants. We saw it having an impact on nuclear plants as well, especially north of Mason-Dixon. But we're also seeing now, there was a report, a week or two ago out of California that, renewables are actually driving out natural gas in California. So that's important as well. And again, I think the reason this agreement was so and is so important, and hopefully we'll get the plant shut down without any further incidents. But again, the reason it's so important is because it gives others an example of how to do it without adding CO2 to the mix. In New York, Governor Cuomo was, not as good about getting down the plants because of his concerns about making his carbon budget, basically. Now, Obama's Clean Power Plan doesn't look like it's going to be coming to fruition anytime soon, but that doesn't mean that the states aren't going to be moving forward and trying to decarbonize their economies. And what this deal proves is that you can get rid of your nuclear plants and still, meet your carbon goals without, basically breaking the bank and, threatening your, constituents and your communities with the risk of a nuclear plant.
Right, and given the work you do, this really, in terms of the big picture, this is a huge deal. I'm betting that, and Linda, and then maybe Ace, I'm betting that when PG&E talks about solar, they're thinking in terms of very big centralized fields of solar panels as opposed to any kind of promotion of rooftop solar. Have you heard any dialogue about that, Linda, and then Ace?
Actually, I haven't, but historically, PG&E, what they've been doing to our to its customer base is to try to block rooftop solar. So they've been very dedicated to doing that. And this may change. I'm not sure because in this, I've read the agreement through a couple of times, and it's not, there's no specific language in there about how to replace the power with solar. But I want to make sure that all the listeners know that this is a deal that was made for economic reasons. It has absolutely nothing to do with safety or anything like that. So PG&E, what it means is that PG&E recognizes that its economic future is better assured with using renewables than it is with using nuclear. So that's the long and the short of it, because if they were to go ahead with the relicensing, they would be required to do a whole lot of retrofits and backfits and all kinds of, or the ones through cooling, all kind. We'll probably get to that later, but yeah. And many, many, many things that would cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. So this is an economic decision, and that's great because it's an example all over the world that it's an, it's an economic decision, and it can be made in other places, too, not just here in California.
Right. There is one mitigating thing I want, I was going to raise it later, but we'll stick it in here. PG&E is on trial for murder in a federal court for killing 8 people in San Bruno with badly maintained gas lines. And there is I do have a piece of this. The piece has been posted to the PRN. And also at ecowatch.com. And, there is an assertion by some, I think Ace, you actually made this when we were talking on the phone, that PG&E is doing everything it can to soften its image. They were fined $1.4 billion by the California Public Utilities Commission for this explosion that they caused in San Bruno. And as I mentioned, they're on federal as well, but you're right, Linda. Overall, this is for economic reasons. Ace, do you want to add anything to what Linda said here?
Well, I don't think they have to worry about killing people at Diablo Canyon because it's insured by the Price-Anderson Act.
And so
it's limited there. But I wanted to mention that probably the reason the workers have signed on to this is that they can see the future of the plant is not good. But the agreement guarantees more than $750 million will be spent so that the workers can find other jobs in solar installation or whatever. It could be anything. That's an awful lot of money, and that's going to come straight from the ratepayers. And it also guarantees that the plant is going to be fully paid for by the ratepayers. So there's a lot of economic reasons why this is a good deal for PG&E.
Yeah, they threw in a lot of goodies for themselves. So let's finish with solar. Is there any commitment, or any three of you can, one of the three of you can jump on this. Is there any commitment in this agreement from PG&E to hire the workers on a future solar projects? Is there any language like that in this agreement?
Not specifically, but they have. There is language in it that talks about retraining workers, and the assumption there is that they'll be retraining for solar jobs or other wind. There's a proposal for. There's some stuff floating around right now about a big wind farm offshore at Diablo Canyon. Someone that I can't speak his name right now, but who's in a position of authority told me the other day that there was a conference last week in D.C. where representatives from like Holland and Denmark and Sweden and Finland and other places where they do a lot of solar wind or offshore wind, that they were there and they're all vying for a place here off Diablo Canyon. So that'll be a big project. So I don't know if those people can be retrained for that or not. Perhaps so. One thing I want to say is that money for retraining and then putting back into our tax base, our local tax base, the money that's lost from the closure of the plant, all that money is there being authorized under this agreement to remove that money from the decommissioning fund, which is a little bit distressing to me.
They don't have enough money to decommission the plant, but they're going to take a third of $1 billion out for this retraining thing. Okay, that's all cool. So let's move on a bit. We've covered the solar aspect of this is huge. We see no, I don't see any specificity in any language of exactly what kind of solar they're going to do. We're going to have to presume that it being PG&E, they're going to go for big centralized solar plants, and certainly not rooftop, which is the death of the utility industry. But Jim Riccio of Greenpeace, Ace Hoffman has mentioned the labor aspect of this, and since you deal on big picture stuff, what can you tell to us? What is the significance now of having the union sign on to this and having a retraining? It's called retain and retrain. What does that mean to you in terms of the big picture politics here?
Well, again, I think it basically helps seal the deal. You don't want to leave anyone out in the cold on this, especially not workers. You know, when a corporation makes a quick decision to change directions, and it's not the workers' fault that they chose to work in the nuclear field, and so just to see a just transition from a fossil fuel based economy and a nuclear economy over to one that's based upon renewables, and the fact that the unions will sign off on it is again a good sign for the workers. And to give mothers and others some credit, the reason PG&E cut this deal is because the mothers challenged them on the seismic problems at the plant, and that there was uncertainty about whether or not they could relicense this, because you had NRC whistleblowers coming forward saying the plant wouldn't meet the severe quake that is possible off of that shore.
I want to ask you again, Jim. On the union issue, can you tell us what it's been like to go up against the unions? You've been working at Oconee in the South and at Indian Point. Can we now, will the anti-nuclear movement now be able to go to the unions at, say, Indian Point, Davis Bessie, other reactors around the country, and say, hey, look at this deal at Diablo. Why don't you get a deal like that? And we'll shut your plant. Well, I mean, is this gonna have a big picture impact? The labor aspect of this deal.
It should. But every state is unique, as you know, in terms of its energy mix, and again, in what they're trying to deal with keeping certain plants open and certain plants closed. In New York, I was kind of shocked when I learned that governor was trying to trade off the upstate plants for the downstate plant, basically getting rid of Indian Point but keeping the ones up in Oswego. But then again, you can't really evacuate New York City. So that, I believe, is what he was looking at. But now that you have at least one big major union, buying into a phase-out plan, and as you know, we've been calling for phase-out for quite some time and have been going through a de facto phase-out, but better to have it planned and structured than to have them just drop off when you have a large problem or a large capital addition like down at San Onofre, or like in other parts of the the states where you had an emergency core cooling system that wouldn't have performed its function for 28 years.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead, Jeff. Finish up. Go ahead.
It's a good opportunity to, pull all the parties together and come up with a decision where, everyone, benefits, and, the downside of shutting down a major facility is minimized.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, all four of us have been on this for a long time. To my knowledge, and anybody correct me here, this is the first time I know of a shutdown being signed on to by the union with a plan for easing the blow on the union workers. Does anybody know, Jim or Ace or Linda, of another instance where this has been done?
Well, it certainly didn't happen at Fort Calhoun last week.
This is not generally how nuclear plants shut down. They generally shut down when the utilities and the corporations are faced with major capital additions that they can't afford, and then they send the reactor into oblivion. At least this gives everyone a chance to plan for the inevitability of Diablo's shutdown.
Well, let me jump to Ace Hoffman real quick. Ace, at San Onofre, in your neighborhood, what happened to the workers when Southern California Edison decided to finally shut?
Most of them were just simply let go, as far as I know.
No retraining, none of that stuff?
No.
Well, so, good to talk these things up. I didn't... certainly, in terms of labor issues, this seems really path-breaking. I mean, this is the first time a utility has been forced to actually give a damn about what happens to the guys, and they are mostly guys, working at the plant. I mean, this is a huge leap forward. And, Jim, since you deal nationally, is this a model we can take to other plants?
That's precisely what the people who've cut the deal have been saying, is that it's a template. And given the number of reactors that are really teetering at this point, hopefully it will provide impetus for other corporations not only to, shut down their nuclear power plant, but to also do right by their workers. We don't want... no environmentalist actually loves a nuclear plant, no one really wants to see the workers left out in the cold. And so hopefully PG&E and this agreement will at least treat those workers in California well, whereas those, I guess, from San Onofre were not treated as kindly.
Well, when you're in San Onofre, you live in San Onofre, I bet you feel a lot more secure driving around in your car knowing the guys are going to be taken care of.
Not really. There's still the 3 million tons of spent fuel.
No. But I'm talking about just driving around town where workers are losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what do you think?
Harvey, I wanted to say something about the deal that was cut, and I think that we've really got to give a lot of praise to the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, because I think they were the ones who really pushed on getting this worker retraining and retention thing, agreement for the workers, because that's been something they've been focusing on for years. And now it's come to fruition, and it can be used as a model for other plants that are closing down. You know, one thing what Mothers for Peace has said for a long time is that any utility, any corporation, anything like that comes into a community and leaves behind the kind of incredible toxic waste that they leave behind after closing a nuclear power plant, that those people should not be allowed to get up, pick up their suitcases, and walk away and leave the people sitting with this toxic legacy. And so this is being partially remediated by this deal. It can never be remediated, but there at least there's an effort and a gesture toward acknowledging the fact that we're the ones that are left holding the bag.
Ace, did you want to jump in on that?
Well, just that if you extend it out across the country to the rest of the nuclear power plants, it'd cost the ratepayers about $10 billion for something that really the utilities should be taken care of regardless. And in most cases, there are going to be jobs they can be transferred into in the solar, and the grid needs to be built up all over the place. So there's lots of other work for the workers. It shouldn't really be a big problem.
Yeah, and we got to say, by the way, that these workers have expertise that's extremely valuable, and not only valuable, irreplaceable. I mean, you know, nobody young is going into nobody's really studying to be a reactor operator anymore, and these are the guys who know the plant. And, you know, I'm terrified at the prospect of all those guys flocking away from San Onofre and all these other reactors. Nobody knows anything about them, for God's sake. I mean, I drive old cars, and, you know, I nobody else can drive my car. It won't start. So, you know, let's really give a hand to this and hope it serves as a breakthrough. There's one other issue I want to cover before we get into the nitty-gritty. And that, and Jim, we'll start with you, and I know this is a topic dear to your heart, the idea of environmentalists supporting nuclear power. Now, this deal was cut with leadership from two major national organizations, FOE, Friends of the Earth, and NRDC, and then, a state group, A4NR, and it comes with the emphatic support of the environmental community, and then you have these, this is a family show. These people running around saying that this, you know, a big movement among the environmental community to support nuclear power. What does this deal say about that?
Well, you know, basically it cuts the legs out from underneath their arguments. They've been claiming that, you know, if you were going to shut down nuclear plants, then we were never going to solve climate change. And now, you know, this deal shows that that's just not the case. You know, we've had plenty of analyses, including one by Greenpeace, including one from Stanford, including the Five Lab study, that has shown for years now that, you know, the impediment to us addressing climate change wasn't technological, it was political. It still is political. And so, again, having a deal cut between a major corporation, electric corporation, the IBEW, and environmentalists to actually replace nuclear power without contributing additional greenhouse gases is a major step forward, and it just shows that the arguments that are being promoted and being paid for by the nuclear industry really ring hollow. You know, we know that, you know, the Nuclear Energy Institute has paid several different groups, including Third Way Energy, to promote nuclear power. And so, again, those front groups that have been out there spewing their misinformation have really had the legs cut out from underneath them and have been made to look rather foolish. You know, it's the same, you know, with the Wall Street Journal article last week where they were claiming that environmentalists have gone soft on nuclear power. You know, that just isn't the case because environmentalists just shut down the nuclear plant in California. So, you know, as the nuclear industry's death spiral continues, and I expect we'll hear more and more of these arguments. But again, this deal in California really helps put that misinformation to bed.
Right on. Okay, so now Linda Seeley, you've been in San Luis Obispo witnessing firsthand this so-called Greens for Nuclear. Tell us about what this deal is going to do to that.
Well, it's interesting, Harvey. Last night that we had an NRC meeting here, an end-of-cycle meeting that they do every year. They review the performance of Diablo Canyon, and the Greens for Nuclear Energy were all there in their green shirts. And I wish that it had been recorded. Unfortunately, it wasn't. But basically, it's a group of people who are, it's like a sort of a cult. people who have this skewed vision of reality, and they're so bold, and they get up and talk absolute nonsense as if it were factual and true. It's very stunning to see it, and they're, you know, it's like people who are sort of have their feet on the ground and clear heads look at them, and just their heads kind of spin around when they hear what these people have to say, because they make absolutely no sense at all. And our community is like, they had a demonstration last week, and maybe about 11 or 12 people showed up, and, you know, yelling and screaming around the courthouse. And it's a little bit like Dr. Strangelove or something, you know. It's a non-reality experience. So I'm not particularly concerned about them, frankly.
Well, my understanding is a lot of the, in San Luis Obispo, a lot of the pro-nukers were union guys anyway, and this is really going to, I'm going to assume that the union rank and file loves this deal, because they know it's better than anything they were going to get anywhere else.
At the last NRC meeting, it was filled with IBEW people, because they were scared about losing their jobs. Last night, there were zero IBEW people there. The only people that were there, because they're practical. They, you know, the reason they wanted to support Diablo Canyon was because they wanted to keep their jobs. It doesn't have anything to do with an allegiance to nuclear power. In fact, they probably don't like it one bit being exposed to radiation, you know?
No, amazing. Ace Hoffman, you want to throw anything in here? Have you witnessed what happened to the workforce at San Onofre?
Well, I wanted to comment actually on those greens up at San Luis Obispo. I spoke to them a year ago. I gave them all a copy of my book, all of them that would take it, which is available online for free at my website. So I'm not plugging it. But the leader of the group told me, I am going to tear this book apart. I'm going to destroy it. And I've seen him twice since, and he's always put me off. I haven't got the time. It's blah, blah, blah. But nobody else has ever succeeded in doing that. They really don't know what they're talking about.
I think the Patrick Moores of the world are going to be looking for other work now. Patrick Moore was I don't really like these guys, Patrick Moore. Jim knows who Patrick Moore is.
The reality is, though, they may not know what they're talking about, they have garnered, you know, the attention and support of people like Jim Hansen, who, James Hansen knows a heck of a lot about climate change. He doesn't know a heck of a lot about nuclear if he thinks it's a solution. But, you know, I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss these people, because they seem to be garnering some money, attention, and support. Now, again, I don't think that they can alter the economic reality of the nuclear industry. But they can be a problem. And, as you know, with, Patrick Moore, you would like to ignore people like that. But there comes a point sometimes, especially, because Patrick Moore was a Greenpeace founder at one point, when when your people, you know, go off the reservation, you know, someone needs to hold them accountable. And, you know, we've done that with Patrick. And, you know, in fact, you know, Patrick, you know, sealed his own fate when he simultaneously said that climate change didn't exist and that, you know, even if it didn't exist, you should actually build nuclear plants to address it. He no longer works for Case Energy, and he no longer is pulling a paycheck from the nuclear industry. But again, I wouldn't underestimate either the resources or the connections that these pro-nuclear folk have.
You know, Jim, I think you're right, and I apologize for diminishing the possibility of their, you know, influencing people. I was just talking about locally, but that reminded me of something that really bothers me, and I don't know if this is the appropriate place to talk about it or not, but I'm going to.
Oh, go ahead.
Which is the Citizens Climate Lobby that's getting, you know, they have a lot of traction, and they're, you know, they're great with the carbon, you know, reducing the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. One of their main advisors is James Hansen. And so they do not specifically, they don't say, if you go to their website, if you look at their literature and all that, there's no mention of nuclear power. But to me, implicit in the fact that James Hansen is one, their senior advisor on climate change, and he is a supporter of nuclear power, that scares me a little bit right there.
It should, because Jim Hansen does carry some weight. But then again, if your solution to climate change is a $21 billion reactor, you really shouldn't be taken very seriously.
Right.
I got to say, as someone who's done politics all my life, I can't imagine the shattering impact that this must have, A, on the so-called environmentalists who are arguing that, you know, the core of their argument is that solar can't do it. And here you have PG&E, for God's sakes, with the union, for God's sakes, saying that the biggest nuclear plant on the West Coast can in fact be substituted with solar. I mean, that is just devastating. Then you also have to think about the so-called solidarity of the nuclear industry. How does NEI, the Nuclear Energy Institute, and all these other pro-nuclear, the industry trade group, deal with the defection of PG&E? I mean, you know, it's spectacular in political terms. And I can't wait to see what Jim Hansen and Stuart Brand and all these other guys have now to say about this deal. It's going to be thrilling to see what they come up with.
Well, I see what they're saying. They're saying it's corrupt. And, you know, they're claiming that our colleagues are corrupt and that, you know, the deal will never work. So, yeah, they're already going off the deep end.
Well, good.
Right.
More power to them, and we'll see them on the other side, as they say. Ace, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, not anything particularly favorable. I would want to mention that this deal does take those environmental organizations largely out of the battle to get the plant shut down within the next 10 years. And it actually even has an agreement in it in which they are not allowed to oppose the ISFC located at Diablo Canyon. That's the spent fuel storage site. And not only that, they're not allowed to oppose the relicensing of it after 2024. And they are allowed to support an interim storage site, which of course means to force some community somewhere to take the waste other than where it is right now.
All right, so listen, we've covered the good news more or less. And I'm saying my impression of this is actually better news for the worldwide movement against nuclear power than it is for the actual movement to shut Diablo Canyon.
Right.
And so let's deal with the specifics of that. I mean, I'm thrilled as someone who's, you know, with Jim and others who've been fighting the industry on the mega level. But in terms of Diablo, I'm not sure. Well, let's talk about it. Jim, what do you think about this deal at Jim Riccio at Greenpeace in terms of the specifics of shutting Diablo Canyon?
You know, it's similar to the deal that was cut a while ago when they were heating up Barnegat Bay And one of our colleagues, Richard Webster, challenged them and got them to shut down the plant early because they'd already gotten the relicensing there because they, you know, it was either put in cooling towers or shut down the plant. They decided to shut down the plant. So there are other precedents out there, but with Diablo, again, I think it's, you know, just like the announcement with Pilgrim, you know, Pilgrim's going to shut down in 3 years. You know, now is when it really gets dangerous because there's no longer an economic incentive to put money into the plant. As Linda and Ace have already pointed out, the workers, you know, are going to start looking elsewhere for other jobs and aren't going to be, you know, as concerned about maintaining this facility. But there, you know, the other side of it is too, is that, you know, this plant, knowing that its future is limited, you know, is just one major capital addition from actually throwing in the towel, you know, and I would say it could happen earlier. Now, granted, you have to have, you know, the makeup energy in place to get rid of the plant, but we know that exists because reactors trip offline all the time. So hopefully we can, you know, have Diablo, you know, and again, I do think this is a period where it can get even more dangerous than it already is, but you also may get an opportunity to shut down the plant earlier, you know, should, you know, another problem come up that makes it, again, prohibitively expensive to move forward.
Okay. That's good. Linda, do you want to jump in with that?
Well, there are a few, yes. We feel, Mothers for Peace feels that 9 years is too long for this plant to operate. And so we have this opportunity coming up this coming Tuesday at the California State Lands Commission to insist that the State Lands Commission order a CEQA review, a California Environmental Quality Act environmental impact report for continued operation of the once-through cooling. Now, the once-through cooling destroys about 80%, is responsible for the destruction of about 80% of the sea life that's lost on the coast of California every year. And so it has a very significant impact. And there's also another part to this, which is that there's a large desal facility already operating at Diablo Canyon. That pumps toxic, you know, a very seriously toxic brine back into the ocean that's now co-diluted with the hot water that they push back into the ocean. And so what Mothers for Peace is doing, along with our colleagues who are not signatories, or is that the right word, to the agreement, is we're going, and actually the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility excluded themselves from that part of the agreement, and they're going to be arguing for a CEQA review of the environmental impacts. And so we feel like we don't know if Gavin Newsom, our lieutenant governor, has cut a deal with them that they're going to, part of the deal is that they're going to be allowed to be exempt from that CEQA review. The Friends of the Earth and NRDC and IBEW signed on to supporting their being exempt until throughout the life of the plant till 2024 and 2025. But A4NR did not sign on to that, and we and the World Business Academy in Santa Barbara and some other groups are going to be pushing that. And also, we may get some other opportunities to get it closed down sooner, too. God forbid that it should be some kind of radioactive release. We don't want that. You know, like Jim said, it's like the perfect storm here with this continued operation of this plant, that there's such a good chance that the workers will slack off, that people will start getting jobs in other places, that PG&E will try to, you know, squirm out of having to comply with all of the regulations and the backfits and all that. So it's a very dangerous time. at this plant right now.
Yeah, I think, Linda, you ought to consider moving. Ace, you want to jump in on this? Ace Hoffman?
Yeah, I would. Actually, in terms of it being a dangerous time, boy, is that ever true, because PG&E is definitely not going to fix anything they don't think they have to fix in the next 10 years, and everything's going to be on a fix-on-fail basis. And regarding the worker skills, I wanted to point out that only about 2 or 3%, if that, are skilled control room operators. The rest are electrical workers. It is IBEW, after all, and steam fitters and people like that. Another point that I wanted to make sure got mentioned is that I believe a lot of the agreement, and Linda, you can maybe correct me if I'm wrong on this, is contingent on the CPUC agreements and decisions.
Yeah.
And that it will delay, the 10 years might stretch out to 12 or 15 if it takes the CPUC a while to make a decision on anything, which is just like the CPUC.
And the other part is that if the CPUC doesn't agree to any part of this deal, then PG&E has the option to withdraw or to reactivate their application to renew the license at Diablo. So while they've pulled it back and it's on, or I don't know if they've done it yet, they will pull it back and it'll be on hold. It will not be removed. They are not canceling their application for relicensing. So it's a very shaky situation where it's like, oh, well, maybe, you know, we'll withdraw it completely if they go along with everything we're going to say. Well, gee whiz, that's putting us all at a lot of risk right there.
And speaking of shaky
Jim
situations,
Rick, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, just that, yeah, I think this is why Friends of the Earth and Mothers and A4N and others, they put aside their challenge, but with prejudice, which, I mean, if these guys try to come back in and move forward with the relicensure, you know, the environmentalists are still there opposing that, if they should try to move that. So, you know, it isn't like they gave away the store and didn't get anything in return.
Right.
So, again, if they ever do try to renege on the promise, I'm sure, and I know the tenacity of all of you guys in California, they're not going to be able to get away with that.
Right.
Well, we think in general it appeared anyway that PG&E was backing off on their relicensing campaign such as it is. I mean, they missed a number of deadlines. So, Ace, you mentioned earlier that this deal includes them getting paid off for the plant. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, I don't have the document in front of me because I had to go to a quiet room. But basically, it says that they are guaranteed to get all the money that they need to spend on it, and all of the money that they don't feel they've already been paid has got to come in for the deal to be completed. So, you know, they want to make money from the plant, and they want to make a profit for their shareholders regardless, and they expect to do all of that. I did want to mention that there's one other shaky situation, and that's the San Andreas Fault, which report after report has been coming out that it is much more likely to erupt and to be bigger than previous predictions. I mean, it's a terrible situation to go another 10 years with this.
Yeah. And the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee met on the 21st and 22nd, just a couple yesterday and the day before. And there was some testimony there by Dr. Robert Sewell, who is a tsunami expert. And he was hired by the NRC in 2003 to do a report for them about the possibility of a tsunami interfering with the cooling system at Diablo Canyon. He did do that report and finished it, and then the NRC never published it. And here we are in 2016, and I'm not going to go, because of time, I won't go through the details of what happened, but through a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, finally it was released in 2015, just a year ago. And he came and testified at the hearing the other night, and he said, I stand by my report that I wrote. It's still as good today as it was 13 years ago, except like it could be enhanced now. There is, because of the geology of the offshore morphology, or whatever you call it, under the ocean, that there's a very good likelihood, if there's a big earthquake, that there would be an underwater landslide that could cause a localized tsunami that could debilitate the plant. He asked for more studies to be done. The thing was buried by the NRC. He said he never could understand. He requested over and over again that the NRC address this study and that they speak with him about it. He said he wrote the study, he gave it to them, and he was never contacted by them. He tried to contact them. He contacted them, but they never responded. I'm so happy.
Basically, then we're looking at the possibility of a tsunami there. Even though Diablo, the two reactors are up in the air, we're about 65, 70 feet on the bluff. The cooler, obviously, the intake systems are at sea level, and a tsunami, as Arnie Gundersen has pointed out, could destroy them. We're almost out of time. Jim Riccio from Greenpeace, can you just tell people what the website is and how to get a hold of you if they need to?
Sure. I can be reached at greenpeace.org and 202-462-1177.
All right, very good. Linda Seeley at Mothers for Peace?
Mothersforpeace.org.
And Ace Hoffman?
AceHoffman.org.
Oh, there you go. All right, so let's proceed with this. My feeling on the timing of this is that it comes right before the Land Commission hearing on June 28th, and PG&E basically understands that they're probably going to lose in front of the Land Commission and be required, or they were going to lose. Now, we don't know. Maybe Gavin Newsom was secretly a party to this deal. They were going to lose and be required to do environmental impact reports that are required under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Review, Quality Act, which was signed by Ronald Reagan. And Jim Riccio, do you think that it's possible that they did this? And then Linda and Ace, that this is just throwing in the towel to avoid the requirements of CEQA?
Well, actually, Harv, again, the challenges made by the local groups, I think, put enough pressure on them. And I think you pointed out the reality, too, earlier, that, they've taken such a black eye on the San Bruno fire that, there was indications from that they couldn't stand another fight, just from a PR perspective. And, getting beyond that and then trying to fight Diablo at the same time just wasn't going to be good for their corporation. So I think that's what, that and the fact that, the environmentalists have been holding their feet to the fire, both Friends of the Earth and Mothers and A4N, to ensure that, the NRC just didn't rubber stamp a license renewal, which is what they've done at every other plant in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Right, Linda?
Well, I don't think it was coincidental that the announcement of this great deal was made on the very same day that the PG&E executives went to court in San Francisco. There was no publicity about that. All the publicity was in their favor. And I do think that I don't know about the Lands Commission, but I think we've got a real uphill battle there.
Ace?
Well, we'll see which environmental organizations that signed onto this agreement are going to show up on the 28th. And Harvey, could I say one more thing about the local tsunamis?
Of course.
Down here at San Onofre, they found sea rocks 200 feet or more up on the cliffs behind San Onofre. And those were undoubtedly, or almost undoubtedly, due to local tsunamis caused by the underwater landslides, such as caused the tsunami in Banda Aceh in in, I think it was 2004, that killed 200,000 people. And so that could not only inundate the Diablo Canyon, but also the spent fuel is, you know, just behind it on a on a bluff in a flattened out area. And when the water recedes, as Arnie has pointed out, that can destroy the intakes for the water intakes and cause a meltdown, and there's nothing they'd be able to do to stop it. So it's the risks here are just phenomenal, and to have to live with them for, you know, till I'm 70 years old is scary.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's a fabulous crew, and I have to have you back because there's so much more to discuss. I do want to say that as a result of my article out at EcoWatch and PRN today, EcoWatch.com, PRN, that I got a note from England that's saying that there was news today that the Hinkley reactors may not proceed, proposed there may not proceed. And so we'll see. I got to look into that. It was a little sketchy, but, and also I was recently in the in Portland on the boat, the Golden Rule, and discovered that the Whoops 2 reactor, the only other reactor remaining on the West Coast, is losing tons of money, and they're in violation of their contractual agreements with the public utility districts up there. So hopefully Diablo will go down soon. There are those who have told me that they think that PG&E is going to throw in the towel after the next fuel load because of the economic pressures and all the other things that are going on. And so this deal really, I think, is a huge victory for the global anti-nuclear movement and really, as Jim says, undercuts the so-called environmentalists for nuclear, and certainly having the union on board is just an incredibly great thing. So, Jim Riccio, you want to give a last word here? I think we're almost out of time.
No, just that, again, it takes, you know, more than, you know, just one environmental group. As you can see, it took a coalition of people fighting for years to get this done. And I think it's a huge victory. You know, congratulations to Linda and everyone else out in California who've put in such an amazing effort on this plan for so long. And, you know, we'll continue to work to ensure that we get the thing shut down without it becoming problematic.
All right, you guys, we'll have you back. Another great victory for Solar Tobia. We'll see you next week in a nuclear-free California.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solar tobia?